Patrick Adams.
And I'm Caroline Legier.
And this is Librarians of Littles, a podcast where we talk about books, give makerspace connections, and give some tips and tricks for working in the library with our youngest learners. Today, as we're entering into March, spring is coming, and so we're going to talk about some spring-themed books. Our first book today is Abracadabra, It's Spring. It is published by Abrams Appleseed in 2016. The author is Anne Sibley O'Brien, and the illustrator is Susan Gall.
There are no awards for Abracadabra at Spring, but Anne Sibley O'Brien has received awards for other books, including the CCBC Choice Award Selection 2011 for What Will You Be, Sarah Me, Junior Library Guild Selection 2017 for In the Shadow of the Sun, Ezra Jack Keats Award 1987 for Jamaica's Find. Yeah. Susan Gall has also received multiple awards for other books, including ALSC Notable Children's Book Commended 2025, Center for the Study of Multicultural Children's Literature Best Book Selection 2024, Charlotte Zolotow Award Commended 2025, Golden Kite Award Picture Book Illustration Finalist 2025, Hornbook Fanfare Selection 2025, Publisher Weekly Best Books Picture Book Selection 2024, School Library Journal Best Book of the Year Selection 2024, Sydney Taylor Book Award Honor 2024, All for Joyful Song, A Naming Story.
Our author, Anne Sibley O'Brien, is a children's book creator. She's illustrated 36 books and authored 14 of them. Many of her books deal with or have a theme of multiculturalism. Anne Sibley O'Brien was raised bilingual and bicultural in South Korea as the daughter of two medical workers. She attended Mount Holyoke College. I don't know if I said that correctly, but I tried. And studied studio art. During her junior year, she did a year abroad and studied at Yuha Women's University in Seoul, Korea. And she wrote a column for the Bulletin of the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators for 23 years, titled The Illustrator's Perspective. She's also a performer, and she created a one-woman show entitled White Lies, One Woman's Quest for Release from the Enchantment of Whiteness. And she now lives with her husband on an island in Maine, and she's a mother of two grown children and has two grandchildren as well. Some of her other books include Hocus Pocus, It's Fall, also illustrated by Susan Gall, Circle Round, illustrated by Hannah Cha, Jamaica's Find, and six other Jamaica titles, which are all written by Juanita Havel, and Talking Walls, and four other titles by Margie Burns Knight.
And Susan Gall completed her BFA at Art Center College of Design and began her illustration career as a poster and calendar artist in Los Angeles. Her passion and talent earned her an internship at Walt Disney Feature Animation, and she became a member of the original animation team at the Disney MGM Studios in Orlando, Florida. Eventually, Susan returned to her native California to continue her passion of creating whimsical illustrations and captivating picture books. Some of her other books include New Shoes for Leo by Lauren Agra Deedy, Joyful Song, A Naming Story by Leslie Newman, Dear Stray by Kirsten Hubert, Welcome Elijah, A Passover Tale with a Tale by Leslie Newman, Bella's Fall Coat by Lynn Plourd, Together, Day by Day, Into the Outdoors, Please Take Me for a Walk, Nightlights.
And actually, Susan Gall actually has a really cool story on her website where she explains that as a child, her second grade teacher had them create their own picture books after Al Perkins, the author, came to do a school visit. And when the kids made their books, she convinced Mr. Perkins to look at the books and read them. And she actually has like a picture of him with a couple of the kids that had made their books, and he's reading another one of his books to them. It's kind of cool. So it's pretty awesome that like those teachers and those authors can come in and have those moments where they can inspire kids. And so that's kind of just a really cool story that she includes on her website, which
Yeah,
is
that
fun.
makes me happy. I love that. That makes me feel like our jobs matter a little bit more.
Yeah,
That's always good to
absolutely. You
hear.
know,
I know our
making those
jobs matter,
connections. Yeah.
but yeah, libraries are important and we know that, but it's
Right.
good to hear the success stories like that. That's
Yeah,
great.
it's pretty awesome. And then, so for this book, Abracadabra, It's Spring, this is a short story that focuses on things changing from a wintry state to a spring surprise. This is a fun rhyming scheme book. It has wonderful, colorful illustrations. The pages, like, it starts as a two-page spread, and then you can turn that second page over, and it becomes a three-page spread to show imagery going from winter to spring. And it's just a really cool book that has that wonderful rhyme scheme. I really enjoyed it. My kids loved that you could open up one of the pages to make it a bigger picture and to be able to see like snow in one side of it to like the flowers blooming on the other side. It showed some of the like the plants changing, it showed some of the animals changing. It was just a really cool book. It's a short story, but my students were engaged with it just because they were wanting to see all of the bright and colorful pictures that went along with it. I really enjoyed this book. I think probably, I would say, I'd probably give this maybe like a 3.5 out of 5. I think that it was simple text. There were some like silly magic words that I had to, like, my kids were like, what does that mean? And so we had to kind of talk about it's just a silly magic word to make, like, to show the change kind of thing. But my kids enjoyed it. They liked it. They liked the pictures for sure. And I think everybody's just excited for warmer weather. And so the idea of reading a book where we're like, it's going to get warmer and we're going to start to see green again is very positive for a lot of my kids.
Yeah, I agree with all the things you just said. I hadn't read this book before you recommended it, and I do really enjoy it a lot. I think the illustrations are really what bring it to life. I love that it, opens up, and I think it's so much fun for kids when they get to see the pages like that that open up. It does make it a little bit harder when, for kids to read independently. I don't know how many times I've had books rip like that, when they open up, like if the kids are trying to be independent with it. Unfortunately, they do get torn a lot, which is kind of a bummer, but for like a whole class read, it's the best. Where like they're just like absolutely amazed, and I don't know how many times reading a book like that, kids have been like, "How did you do that?" And they just think it's like seriously magic the first time they see it. It's kind of awesome to get to read a book like that with kids. So I agree actually with the made up words. That's in the past, long ago when I used to read Dr. Seuss to kids, I always had to talk to him for a long time, like, look, this isn't a real word. And then I just stopped. Aside from the fact that, a lot of Dr. Seuss's themes aren't necessarily appropriate anymore. He definitely lived in a different era, and his writing reflects that. But I never really liked his books anyway because of the made-up words, where it's really confusing for our kids who are still learning language a lot of the time, especially our ESL kids. That can be a little bit tricky. But there's not too many in this
No,
book.
yeah.
It's like once every, it's like every two or three pages, there's like a silly made up word. So it's not
Yeah.
too bad, but it still takes a minute to explain. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's what it was. I stopped and said, okay, these are all just the magic words to make the magic happen, you know, and kind of explained it that way. And once the kids understood that after the second or third time, they were like, oh, okay, and just kind of let it go from there. And it was fine. But yeah, just having to take that second and explain it for sure, especially for those ESL kids that are trying to learn English, and then we throw in random silly made up words like that, and they're like, wait, what? So
yeah, they're not ready absolutely. For nonsense yet.
Not yet. Especially the pre-K ones. Like,
yeah.
Even some of like my first and second grade ESL kids were still like, wait, what? Like, so for sure. But it is a very sweet story. It's very cute. And like you said, I agree with you. The pictures are really pull it together and make it just so beautiful. The way the paintings and the pictures are just so vibrant. It's really good. So if we're going to incorporate a makerspace activity, I couldn't decide. I had two ideas, and so I'm going to tell both of them, because depending on the situation that you're in, you might be able to do one or the other easier. So my first idea is to have the kids plant some seeds. Now, for this, you would need some kind of seeds. You can get seeds pretty cheap, and if you go to some places, you can get donated seeds pretty easily also. So getting some seeds, and then either having plastic cups for each kid to be able to plant in, or if you're fortunate enough to have like some planters around your campus, if you could situate one of those planters near the library, near a window so the kids could see, or near the playground so when they're outside they could see what they've done. But going out there with the seeds and some soil and maybe some gardening tools, having access to water, and then having the kids actually plant some seeds. They can put some soil in a cup and put that seed in there and cover it up and give it some water and take it home. Or if you do have that planter, like taking a field trip outside to the planter and having every kid be able to put some soil in there and put in that seed so that they can see them grow as the weather gets warmer, and just kind of making sure that you keep it watered so that they do start to grow. I think that would be a fun activity that if you could keep it on the campus, especially with the planters, that would allow the kids to continue to come by and see it. If you could get it close to a library window where they could see it, that would help with that connection maybe. If that's not something that's feasible, another possible activity is having the kids make their own flowers using like paper, toilet paper rolls or paper towel rolls, some construction paper, tissue paper, maybe some paper plates. You probably need glue and possibly some markers or some scissors, but use the paper towel roll or the toilet paper roll as the stem of the plant, and then they can make a flower at the top of it. You could situate a paper plate on there and have them decorate the paper plate. You could have them tear pieces of construction paper to make the petals of the flower. There's lots of different ways you could do that to give them like an arts and craftsy kind of way to have a flower of their own to take with them.
Yeah, those are great activities. I love it. When I was in the classroom teaching pre-K, we used to plant seeds and watch them grow in the classroom. But actually, now that you mention it, I think I like doing it in the library even better, because you could plant it as a class, and like have one. When I was in the classroom, I always used to do with pre-K, I used to have a bigger clear plastic cup that we would plant in so that the kids can see the roots and the everything growing underneath the soil as well. Personally, I liked having, I know I've seen some people do the Ziploc baggies and have like the lima bean growing inside. I prefer to have soil because that's part of the lesson, is like plants need soil to live. Right. And I think it's a little bit confusing if you skip that part of the lesson. But if you did that like as a class and just have like one cup per class, then they could see the progress a little bit better. Because if you do it in the classroom and it's like a day by day thing, they grow so slowly that it's like, okay, let's check. Nothing's happening yet. Like, and then you're going to have 3 or 4 days of that. Whereas in the library, if they come in like once a week, then they can like really see the difference. So I like it. I don't know why I hadn't considered it for the library, but I like it.
You know, and then worst case, you get a couple flowers in the library that would brighten up the place a little bit too. So
yeah,
that'd be good. You want to take on the Library of Little's management tip this week?
I would love to.
Awesome.
All right. This week for our Library of Little's management tip, we are going to be talking about the Novel Effect app. I personally use an iPhone. I don't know about other platforms, although I'm sure Novel Effect exists on other platforms as well. But the iPhone has an app called Novel Effect. It's free to download, but then you do have to pay for services eventually. there's a very wide selection of books on novel effect where you can flip through, pick a book. Like, for example, I always start the school year with Chicka Chicka Boom Boom. And when I activate the Novel Effect app, when I start reading the book, the app will listen to my voice and it will play background music and sound effects along with the book. So like when I'm reading Chicka Chicka Boom Boom and I'm reading, you know, A told B and P told C, I'll meet you at the top of the coconut tree. And then you can hear the coconuts falling down after it climbs the tree. So it has some really cool sound effects that go along with it, some fun music to go along with it. Because it's listening to my voice too, I do have to talk into the phone. I'm not gonna lie, that can get a little bit annoying sometimes. But because it listens to my voice so well, if I have to stop and, you know, say a child's name or remind kids to stay on task or anything at all, if I tell a kid to go to the bathroom, like it'll like pause where it's at in the soundscape and it won't go on until I keep reading. And it's kind of fabulous for like keep drawing kids in a little bit more, kind of gives them something else to engage in. I don't know how many teachers have asked me like how they can get it and where they can purchase it and all the things. It's very well loved on our campus. It has a 7-day free trial period if you want to try it out, but I think after that it costs, I want to say $50 a year. So I mean, really not too bad. I guess it's like $5-ish a month. But usually it's on sale for about half off around Teacher Appreciation Week. And I think I've even seen in Scholastic, like in my book fair rewards, where I think I just saw that this last time I had a book fair where you can use your book fair rewards to, from Scholastic only, to purchase a subscription to it. So I like it for my library personally. It has only preloaded books on it, but it's got hundreds of books on there and you can recommend other books and they're always loading up new ones. So yeah.
This sounds like a great app. I have not used Novel Effect. I've heard about it before and it's one of those things where I'm like, I should look into that more. But the more you've described it, the more I'm like, I really need to look into that and try it out because I think those sound effects and stuff will really grab the kids' attention. And that's a really cool idea that it can listen to your voice and hear the story and know when to stop and pause and begin again and everything. That's really cool.
That's my favorite, is how well it listens. I have tried hooking it up with like my earbud so I can like read into the earbud and play it out through a different speaker. And I haven't figured out that trick yet.
Okay.
If I ever figure out that one, that'll be a great day. But as of right now, I'm kind of holding up my phone and like reading into my phone. That's a little bit annoying, not going to lie. Yeah. But you can still get it, like even if you hold your phone. I couldn't figure out how to get my phone to hook up to two different Bluetooth devices and have output into one source or input into one source and output with another.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
That was where I was failing.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a me thing. Maybe that's just,
I don't know. I'm going to have to test this now.
Technology handicap. I don't know.
I'm definitely going to try this out. I'm looking forward to it because, yeah, even I see all the time that there are different books that are like, hey, check out the Novel Effect with this book, but I haven't tested it. So I think this would be a good time of year to test it out and see the kids' reactions because I think they'll really enjoy it as well.
Yeah. If you have any Scholastic rewards dollars.
Yeah, I've got some Scholastic dollars. Maybe that's...
Go check that out.
I've got like 4,000 Scholastic dollars they keep emailing me. You've got a lot you want to use them. So maybe this is what I spend some of it
there
on.
There you go.
That's a good idea. I like it.
Yeah. And I usually don't pick books based on Novel Effect. Yeah. Usually I pick my book and then I go search. It's really easy to search for books on there. Cool. So.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, our next book today is called When Spring Comes. It's published by Green Willow Books, an imprint of HarperCollins Publishers in 2016. The author is Kevin Henkes, and the illustrator is Laura Dronzek. This book won the Read Aloud Indiana Book Award 2018, Pennsylvania Keystone to Reading Book Award 2018, 2018 Read On Wisconsin Book Club, El Dia de los Niños Selection 2017, Children's Favorites Award 2017, Cooperative Children's Books Center Selection 2017, and Kevin Hinkes is the winner of the 2020 Children's Literature Legacy Award. The ALA gives this award annually to an author or illustrator who has had a significant impact on children's literature. Okay.
That's really
and
cool.
Then for the author history, it's kind of both?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's kind of... I know... Yeah. All right. So, growing up in Racine, Wisconsin, Kevin Hinkes had a passion for both art and writing. Going through college, he discovered that writing children's literature combined his love for both of those. He met his wife, Laura Dronzek, while attending college at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. They currently live in Madison with their two children.
It's really cool that he's able to make books and work with his wife at the same time. That's really cool.
It is. I did not know they were married. I've seen plenty of books by the two of them together. Obviously, plenty of other books by Kevin Hinkes, but
yeah.
I had no idea they were married until this episode came about.
Yeah.
That was pretty fun. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. All right. So some other books by our author, Kevin Hinkes. He has written many other books over a long and prestigious career. Some of his more notable books include Kitten's First Full Moon, which was the Caldecott winner for 2004. Olive's Ocean, a Newbery Honor of 2004. The Year of Billy Miller, a Newbery Honor for 2014. Waiting, the Caldecott Honor and the Geisel Honor for 2016. And then the rest of his books in this series include Winter is Here, In the Middle of Fall, and Summer Song. Other books that he has written and that have been illustrated by his wife, Laura Dronsnick, include Finding Things, Little Houses, Birds, and Oh.
All right, in this book, The Emergence of Spring is described in second-person narration. So as you're going through, there's a lot of bold, bright illustrations, and it's really like the narrator is just speaking directly to the reader. I like that it's speaking directly to the narrator, like, or to the reader like that, where it's like, okay, wait, if it's on this page, there's these big sticks, but if you wait, out come the blooms or something like that. I don't know. I'm not quoting directly, but it's something similar to that. It's not quite rhyming and it's not quite poetry, but it's still kind of lyrical and kind of, it's just got a very smooth cadence to it where it's like, okay, we see this now wait for it. And now we're going to see this. And it's very kind of calming, I think, the way it's written. There's a couple of pages that have some nice alliteration on it. I really like the illustrations in this book as well. I think the books that we both picked this week are accidentally very similar with really simple text. I like the text in this book a lot better. I do like how it doesn't rhyme and it flows really well, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it has apt descriptions for everything that's on the page. I really like how bold the illustrations are. It's just very bright. It's very pretty. It just feels like spring a little bit more, I think. I like how simple the illustrations are. It's not too overwhelming. This is my favorite spring book, I think. This whole series is pretty great, where it's just very simple and it kind of shows the winter leaving and then you can see spring arriving. And then at the end, it's like, but wait for it because summer's coming. It kind of shows the progression of the seasons pretty well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this book is great. I think you're right. Lyrical is a good way to describe the writing of it. And the pictures are beautiful and bold. And I really like how in the other book, we have just like a full scape of a picture. In this book, what caught my attention and what I really liked was that some of the pictures, it's stages, and so you can see, like, at one point, it's, we have a snowman, but just wait, because he's slowly melting the entire time. And then later on, it's a plant that's starting as a seed and slowly starting to grow, and a caterpillar that's going into a cocoon to become a butterfly. And so, like, showing some of that stage kind of stuff more in this book, so that you could also incorporate science with it, and you could talk about life cycles, and, like, 'cause around spring is when a lot of schools start to hit that kind of science, where you're talking about life cycles of plants and life cycles of animals and that kind of stuff. So you could actually incorporate some of that in there also. And yeah, I think this was a really great book. I agree.
Yeah, I might give it a 5 out of 5 for like a spring book.
I
I
think
think
so
I
too.
might. I
I think
enjoy
you're
it a
right.
lot. And Kevin Henke's also, I didn't realize how many online resources he has. If y'all haven't looked up, because I hadn't looked up any of his information prior to this episode, but he has a lot of really good connections. Nothing for this book in particular, but he's written so much. He did have some direct lessons for Winter is Here, not this one, but for his winter book. But yeah, if you need an extension for anything of his, like, it's probably on his website. There was a lot of really great resources there, so you might want to check that out. For a makerspace activity for this book, I was thinking it might be fun to do a sensory bin of some kind. You could have just a big bin with anything really that looks like dirt. You could do sand if you're feeling brave, or you could. Personally, I always like to do things like beans or rice or something like that, just in case little kids put everything in their mouths. And if you do something like that, if they accidentally get it in their mouth, it's kind of okay because it's food. Of course, we're going to encourage kids not to do that, but accidents happen every now and then. So if I was going to do this in the library, I would use like black beans or brown beans and then print laminated flowers with letters on them and hide them inside the garden so that kids can dig through there. And you could match like letter to letter, or you could have like different items in there that like you could have a bunch of flowers and you have to, match it to the letter F, or like a watering can that you match to the letter W or something like that. Little springtime things that you could match, practice alliteration, or really any other skill that you're working on, you could do. There's a lot of different directions you could take that with.
I love that idea. I always forget about the possibility of doing sensory bins. I think sensory bins are a great way to get those kids to be able to have that tactile connection to the lessons. I gotta do that more. And I love this idea. I definitely like the idea of doing the dry beans or rice. Even if we convince the kids not to eat any of it, sand is just gonna make such a mess. It's so much harder to clean up sand than clean up some dried beans or some rice. So I think
I know, it's almost like
definitely,
glitter. It's kind of terrible. I never
it just
use it
gets
in the library.
like all of a sudden I feel like Anakin. It's coarse and it gets everywhere. Like I would avoid sand at all costs in a sensory bin, but I think the
Same.
dried beans or rice is definitely a great idea for that. Yes. Excellent idea.
Right, thank you. Ready? Thank you all for joining us today on this episode of Librarians of Littles. We hope you found some fresh ideas for inspiring our young readers. Please be sure to subscribe and connect with us on social media.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Librarians of Littles. We hope that you've enjoyed it. Check back each Wednesday for a new episode. Librarians of Littles is a podcast produced and hosted by Patrick Adams and Caroline Legier. Editor, Patrick Adams. Our theme song is performed by J.D. Adams. You can follow us on Instagram at Librarians of Littles. You can follow us on Blue Sky at littleslibrarian.bsky.social. And you can send us your emails at librarianoflittlespod@gmail.com.
I did listen to part of a podcast today. I did 10
Yeah.
minutes.
Okay. And how'd it go?
You're a good editor. Good job. I was like, that's where I fumbled. I can tell. I can tell, but you can't tell.